Okay, and can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Elijah Armstrong.
All right. And so we're talking today about the education movement, all of these things. This past week had some interesting moments on the education front. First off, I wanted to ask you about Betsy DeVos's visit to a historically black college and the welcome that she received or didn't receive.
Right. I was extremely proud to see the students resist Betsy DeVos, and despite the administration bringing them against their will and having her just kind of give a commencement speech instead of actually being there to discuss like dialogue and her constant destruction of education and primarily public education. So it was great to see the students kind of stand up against that. I was really inspired by it. Was really happy to see that they didn't just allow her to come there and it'd be business as usual.
Yeah, and she had made some particularly, shall we say, ignorant comments about the history of right. universities like Bethune-Cookman in the past, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, her saying that HBCUs are a definition of school choice is not true at all. Right. Like, if it's a choice, if it's deciding not to be educated and being educated and choosing to be educated, right. if that's what you mean by choice, then yeah, that was the choice that was given to folks. Right. The institutional racism that didn't allow folks to receive higher education. Cause for the birth of historically black colleges, and for her to try to make it seem like it was the same as choosing between a private school and a public school is just really disheartening and just kind of shows her lack of understanding of history and also even the education as the institution, and as someone who's going to be the secretary, it's very disheartening that she doesn't really understand the history of education in the United States, nor does she even take the time to want to learn that and actually try to better education, but kind of just push her agenda that she's been pushing since she's been in Michigan and just destroying education because she doesn't see education as a public good, but more as a commodity.
Yeah, and I thought the comments from the school administration were interesting, saying that they sort of needed to make friends with this administration. And of course, there was that photo op of Trump with HBCU presidents.
Right.
You know, it's this interesting game that the Trump administration is playing, right? On the one hand, they say some pretty racist things, and then they're like, oh no, but we want to, you know, I'm going to go give this speech at this university.
Right. No, I mean, well, they're really good with optics, right? Mm-hmm. They're always very good with like optics and they understand like symbolism. Mm-hmm. So they will take the picture with us, even though they invite us to a meeting that actually discusses really nothing, and mm-hmm. then turn around in the same breath and then say something like, oh, well, looking into it now, that funding that we said we were going to do may be unconstitutional.
Right.
So it's like they present themselves one way, but really in the same breath do something that's completely contradicting to what they just did, which has pretty much been this whole administration, right? So why we think it would be any different with us, I don't know. I mean, that's just the game that he plays, right? It's the whole, you know, oh, I'm with you, and then in the same breath, I'm against you. So it's a tactic they've been doing for years, and Trump has really mastered that, and it's been doing that. That's the only thing he has been doing well, I would say, is tricking people with his false narratives.
In the same week, and I think these things are connected, and I'm sure you can speak a little bit more to how they're connected. You know, we saw Paul Ryan show up at Harlem Success Academy, a charter school in New York, and also greeted with a lot of protest. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to look at these two events together, I think.
Right. No, and that's exactly what I'm saying. So it's like, it's the opposite piece, right? Like, after you get everybody with the horrible healthcare thing that they just did in the House, you run and try to have Betsy DeVos go down and speak at the Zoom, and then you have Paul Ryan go to the Harlem Success Academy to make it seem like, you know, you care about Black and brown folks, especially in their education, and these are some of the shining examples of things that you support when you don't really support them. Yeah. And even with the charter school piece, right? Like, yeah. I think charter schools work on very small scales, mm-hmm. But not up to large scale, right? When you try to actually privatize it, which is what folks have been doing, then it makes, like I said, education a commodity, and then it's education only becomes about graduation and all these things, and you really minimalize and trivialize it for folks so that you can sell it to folks, right? Like, in order for you to sell something for someone, you have to make them think that your service is needed. So to make them think your service is needed, you do all type of things that's been happening in education over the years. It's always the first thing that they cut to balance the budget. It's always horribly underfunded. And then somebody pops up and be like, oh, well, you know, we should grade schools. And, oh, well, the schools that we go to are different than the schools you go to. You could have the same type of school that we have, when it's not true, right? And it's what's been happening in education over the last 20, 30 years. It's, people talk a lot about, like, private prison industrial complex. And, you know, if you're in pharmacy, they know all about the pharmaceutical industrial complex. But folks don't talk enough about the educational industrial complex, because education is where all these things tie in together. And that's what we've been having for the last 20-something years, is education industrial complex, where you have all these businesses come in trying to provide a service and really privatize education, which is our last public good. Yeah. And the Republicans have been doing this for the last 20 or so years, especially DeVos. Michigan is one of the worst states when it comes to education. I think they're ranked like 46th last time that I checked, and I visited those schools and those communities. And when you destroy a community, when you destroy a school, you destroy that community. You can go to any community in America, and I can tell you how good that community is based off the level of education in that community. So it's also, to me, by design of how they're destroying our communities and also using them for gentrification, because areas where they do take over these schools and they charterize them, all these new high rises go up, public housing goes away, and it's supposed to, you know, bring in mixed income and all this other, you know, words that they love to use. But really, it's pushing out the poor people that live there, bringing in new folks, and the school is used as like the hook to bring folks together. So education is a huge piece that we just haven't really been talking about enough in a real way that's really been affected. Especially our community of color, is the destruction of public education is a direct correlation of all the things, you know, directly tie into it.
Yeah. It's interesting when you say that the commodifying education makes it all about that graduation moment. And it was really, when mm-hmm. you think about it that way, watching the students turn their back on Betsy DeVos is like, it's also they're turning their back on that idea that this is just about getting your degree and then... it's really interesting.
Right, absolutely. Like, I thought that was huge, because that's it, right? Like, that's what they're always trying to make it seem. Like, the end goal is graduation, but graduation is just one mere component. That graduation simply says that you were able to follow a process and able to do the things necessary for you to get a piece of paper that says you're teachable and you have knowledge in a specific subject. Usually, you know, that's what a bachelor's is. And for that to be the end-all, be-all of education, it's really self-education, very short, right? That's an extremely business way of thinking about something, right, where it's a bottom line,
right?
And education in itself doesn't have a bottom line like within business, right? Like, in business, you have a bottom line, it's profit motive, right? So then if you flip that and commodify with education, then the profit motive would be, what, graduation. So then that's the bottom line. So then nothing else matters but graduation, right? But we all know in education, you learn more than just graduation. You learn social norms. You learn you learn things about yourself to how to figure out how you're going to move and add to this world and be in this world. You learn all these different things. Like through education, you learn how to be social and make friends, or you learn, you even learn the bad things, right? Like you learn about the bullies, you learn about the racism, and it doesn't necessarily have to be taught to you. You can see it when you go to your schoolyards and stuff and how segregated they are and things like that. So you actually learn everything about the world through education. Like that's how it works. So for you to try to bottom line it lets me know that somebody is profiting off of this, that someone has a motive to, they want to profit of, oh, okay, and simply make education about graduation. But you go to these Ivy League schools and things like that, and some of the most quote-unquote successful people didn't even graduate. So if the bottom line is graduation and some of the most successful people in the world never graduated, then education clearly must be bigger than that. But why is it that it's being pushed to certain communities that this is the only thing that matters in education?
Yeah, and it's been, you know, one of the things that I've watched over the last few years is there has been a shift away from the sort of unequivocal support for charter schools. That there really is a growing movement in this country that supports public schools, that really is willing to fight for their public schools. So I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I guess just to give more background, I work with the National Education Association. I'm an organizer, education organizer, so it's a teacher union. And I'm a part of AROS, and that's one of those alliances. So AROS is the Alliance to Reclaim Our Schools. It's made up of parents, community groups, teachers unions, other social justice nonprofits that are all about reclaiming public schools and having the type of schools that our community deserves. Yeah. And that's an ongoing movement that's been happening. We had been having walk-ins where we're having folks from the community, unions, parents, students, all walk into schools instead of walking out. And the symbolism behind that is that you're walking in to reclaim your school, because a lot of public schools aren't friendly to the public, unfortunately. Like trying to get into some of these public schools almost feels like you're trying to get into jail or something to that effect, because there's so many restrictions, and even the way it's run and stuff, it doesn't seem as welcoming and not the type of school that folks want. So we're kind of envisioning getting folks to envision, you know, that these are your schools, like they're from your communities, they're paid by your tax dollars. Like, we should have fully funded public schools, and we should have the type of schools that we want. Teachers shouldn't worry about having to teach to a test. Students shouldn't have the pressure of these standardized tests that we know are biased, that have, we, you know, all of these things, you know, wraparound services, because a lot of communities are impoverished and deal with poverty, and having health services in these schools helps the surrounding community. So we know what type of schools that we need, and we're trying to get, and it's a growing movement of folks to really claiming and demanding the type of schools that we want, and not allowing them to privatize it and really destroy public education. Because if they destroy public education, they privatize it, then we know what happens when things get privatized, right? That doesn't necessarily mean better. In most cases, it usually means worse, because now someone has ownership over it and they can decide and they can discriminate at their leisure because they own it. So we have to keep education public so that the people own it, so that we can decide what type of schools and what type of education that we want. And with the rise of the school choice and the vouchers folks, they're trying to take education down that privatization route, because it's, they're rewarded from it. They get money off of all of these things. Like, the money goes into their hands from the, they own the textbooks, they own the tests, they even own the equipment, you know, that goes into school, all the different software things. So it's a $1 billion industry, right? Like I tell folks, we spend $500 trillion as a nation on education. So that money is not going to bounce. So it's not like the housing market or the internet and all these other different things. That's tangible. That's money that won't go away. So, of course, corporations and stuff are always trying to find ways to get their hands on that type of money, because that money's going to come in. Our money comes in through our property taxes and things like that. So that's going to be there. So we've got to fight for it, and we've got to fight for it now. I think it's I think it's been shown. We've seen what happens when you take away the funding from these public schools and you put them in these charter schools that don't have the same accountability. And some of these schools just are fly-by-nights that are just literally there to take money. Other schools literally destroy these kids' confidence by constantly overtesting them, burning out our teacher workforce because teachers are held to these ridiculous market-based standards where their whole evaluation is literally based off student test performance, and they understand that these students are coming from poverty. So it's not that they can't understand or process the information, but they're dealing with so much that they're not always necessarily there. So it's a lose-lose cycle for everyone. And then they're deeming these folks as failures on top of that. And no one wants to be associated with anything that's failing. So there's a huge movement right now, like I was saying, to kind of just encompass everything. Arrows, Alliance to Reclaim My Schools, but we're not the only ones. There's other different coalitions, but all of us hopefully are coming together and working together around demanding the type of public schools that our communities deserve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, I was just thinking about even the graduate student teachers who are on hunger strike at Yale right now, that this really is everywhere, right? Even at the richest universities, you still have teachers fighting to get paid.
Right. No, I'm not as abreast to that. I've heard a little bit about that situation, so I can't really speak on it, but I definitely support what they're doing and bringing attention to that cause. So it just speaks volumes that even at Yale, right? Like when we think about integration, the only level of education that really didn't get integrated was Ivy League schools, because they've been pretty much the same since their inception. State schools and other schools kind of got integrated, but really that was a monetary thing. Television came around. They were able to use that to get profits off of folks through the athletic program. So that's why you have, you know, a huge integration in those schools. But in your Ivy League schools, whether it was sports or academics, they still have really never integrated truly. They're still predominantly white institutions that folks of color still struggle to actually be a part of, because they don't really allow the space in a real way. So I think what the Yale graduate students are doing is awesome, to really kind of continue to shed light on that, because that, I feel like that is the only part that really hasn't truly been integrated, and there's never really truly been an effort to integrate it. Like, no one really thought, like, oh, well, you know, they're Ivy League schools. But Ivy League schools are the place where literally the folks that run this world and create jobs for folks come from. And if none of the folks that look like me are there, then that just literally means that we're going to be working class forever.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're looking at the Trump administration on so many levels, mm-hmm. talking about healthcare, we're talking about immigration, we're talking about deportations, we're talking about prisons and policing, and mm-hmm. now the FBI this week. And, you know, I feel like education often has kind of slipped off the radar a little bit with this administration. And so, yeah, it'd be great to hear a little bit more about sort of what's going on with the education movement right now. Where are things, where are there struggles that people should know about around the issue of public schools that people can connect to?
Well, that's the thing, right? Like in education intersects with all those things.
Yeah.
So when we talk about like policing, the policing that happens to folks in the community, they get their first taste of that in schools. The policing that goes on in the schools, It's funny how, you know, the whole zero tolerance policies came about was because of after what happened in Columbine, when, you know, a disgruntled student who had been bullying decided to unfortunately take the lives of others than himself in an age of rage. But that was in suburbia Colorado, but where most of the most of the security and things measures took place in inner city schools that had never dealt with that.
Right.
So the places that actually were the most affected by the zero tolerance policies were places where none of that had ever taken place. So when you go to the Detroits, the Chicagos, the Philadelphia, the Baltimores, and they have all these metal detectors and things like that, it's a direct correlation from to the places where it was affected. But if you go to Columbine, like I've been to Columbine, like there's no metal detectors at those schools, but that's the school where it happened at, right? So it makes you also think of like, who are we policing and who are we profiling and who are we protecting? And then you hear these horrible stories about school resource officers constantly slamming kids and things like that. And when you look at those videos, the thing that's constant is the person that's getting slammed is usually a person of color. Whether it's a woman or a man, it's usually a person of color being slammed. And it doesn't usually matter the age. I've seen videos of a kid young as 5 getting arrested over a tantrum, or up to a young lady up to 17 or 18 being slammed for being late to class. You know, so it varies. And then, so to me, how folks of color have been treating the education system is literally a direct correlation of how we're treated outside the communities. If we're criminalized in our schools, we're going to be criminalized when we're in our communities as well. So there's the correlation for that. And then we talk about the immigration piece. So that also directly comes into the education piece.
Yeah.
Kids are being picked up. You know, ICE raids are happening at bus stops. Kids are afraid to go to school or walk home from school with their parents or have their parents come pick them up.
Yeah.
Because literally they're waiting at these bus stops or following kids home because they're profiling kids who they think are undocumented and following them home and, you know, deporting, trying to deport them or their parents. And that's happening, you know, from schools, right? Or you've got children who are being bullied simply because they're Muslim or simply because they're Latino or things like that. Those things happen in school, so they're a microcosm. So to me, education is always there. Now, whether it's talked about in a way where folks can see the direct connections, that's different. But it's very prevalent in all things. I mean, even with the healthcare piece, right? Mm-hmm. Like most of the folks that need healthcare also go to schools that are 95 or 100% Title I schools, where there's kids that are high impoverished areas that are literally all kind of pushed together in one area, so they're all completely underfunded. And those kids, their parents, their families are the ones that are suffering the most from also this healthcare piece. So it's just like how now in the school system where they could do rezoning and make sure that all these schools are supplemented with enough resources for them to be sustainable, but they purposely make sure that these schools are highly concentrated with poverty. And then those are the schools that are always subject to low test scores and the schools that need to be improved and things like that, right? But it's like these kids don't have the resources. You're literally stripping them of the resources that they need and then calling them failures and calling them just failures and saying it's their fault and you can help them out. And then the first thing that they do, right, is they bring in more funds.
Yeah.
They have fundraisers. You see the little videos on YouTube and stuff like that. And then you realize that now some of those families in the area own those homes instead of them being renters. So then they do all the things that you need to have that balance, but they couldn't do that when they were in public school. Like, so the same way that they're stripped and they don't have the services that they need, it's the same thing that's happening with the healthcare. The folks that are most affected, those students go to those schools. They come from those areas.
Right.
So they all of the things to me intersect at the education level. You can literally look at education and pick an issue, and I can show you how that plays out outside of the education arena. So it's, to me, it's pivotal. And of course, I'm biased because I'm an education organizer,
right.
But I see all the different, you know, parallels and tracks and how they all intersect, but they don't necessarily, they're not necessarily talked about in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do in the education movement is get our folks to understand that. So there has been a big effort for us to be a part of the immigration fight and the fight for 15 and the fight for healthcare and the fight against policing. So We were even part of the big May Day celebration that happened May 1st, where we were with all the different groups and celebrating not only workers' rights, but, you know, immigrant rights and stuff. So really trying to get folks to see that the education movement has always been there, but we're trying to be better allies and make sure that we really see ourselves as a part of the overall movement.
Yeah, excellent. How can people keep up with you and your work?
Yeah. It's going to sound corny, but the Facebook page, the Alliance to Reclaim Our Schools, you can follow us there and get all the updates of what's kind of going on in public education around the country. You can follow me on Facebook as well, Elijah Armstrong, just type me and I'll usually pop up. That's pretty simple to reach out to.
Excellent. Awesome. Thank you.